This is a show where we do things and talk about stuff. My name is Chris. I'm joined, as per usual, by my pals. Class of 2000s voted most likely to wear black, Allison Tarr.
Are you really class of 2000?
No. I could be. I was smarter than I was.
And... Chumbawamba expert, Gary Kovar.
I have been known to thump a tub or two.
This is the show where it's basically like Balderdash. We don't have, we don't know what the topic is before going into it. One of us, generally Allison, brings the topic and we discuss it as if we did know what it was, and hijinks ensue. As always, you can suggest topics, you can ask us questions, you can just tell us why you bother listening to this show, if that's the thing that you do, through our form on our website,
www.binaryjazz.us,
or you can contact us on Twitter, @binaryjazz.
I take it that you were doing intros today, no?
That's how it rolls.
I think that's what just happened.
Yeah, that's okay. It's fine.
Do you have something planned, Gary? Do you feel left out? Would you like to do your intro?
No, I just thought it was my week, and I didn't have anything planned. But I, you know, here we are. If I don't have intros planned, we don't have to get into the topic. So
that's true. This week, I believe we're switching things around. And Allison is not going to come to us with a topic. Instead, Gary is going to come to us with a topic, which I will predict in advance is something spacey.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Pioneer movement is the topic. Pioneer movement.
That's the distance traveled from the center of a zero to the outside, to the round part of a zero. It's called the Pioneer Movement.
I was going to say that the Pioneer Movement is a movement of people organizing to pioneer habitation on Mars. So it's a movement a consortium of, you know, business leaders and citizens and whatnot to find a tangible and feasible way of populating the red planet.
So hinting is not a thing we do.
No.
So I will not confirm or deny that this has anything to do with space. But
it's like manifest destiny for space.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pioneer Movement. Yeah,
like Oregon Trail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. alternately, so I live in Utah.
Yes.
I don't know if other states do this. I don't think other states do this, but we're really a big fan of the pioneers that settled here.
I've always said you live in the best Utah.
We because it's Utah. Yeah. We have a Pioneer Day, which is a state holiday where we blow up fireworks. We're really big fans of pioneers.
Wait, were the pioneers big in the fireworks?
No.
Okay.
But we celebrate them by blowing up fireworks, I guess.
I was just hoping I was about to learn something crazy. Like, yeah, they knew how to pack gunpowder to make
old-timey fireworks. There's nothing better.
So many of those old black and white pictures people have, like, missing limbs.
So, because Utah is so big into pioneers, I feel like I know a little something about pioneers and the pioneer movement.
Yeah.
Pioneer movement is just when you have a caravan of pioneers going from one place to another, mm-hmm. and it's traveling across a particular route, and as it's moving, it's referred to as pioneer movement.
I mean, I guess technically the
pioneers are moving.
Nothing wrong with that definition. However, it is not correct.
That's like a big wagon train.
Yeah.
Only
space. Do you like how I brought in all this outside knowledge and then I just did something really, really obvious?
I mean,
literally defined the two words and just put them together.
To be fair, it wouldn't like where I went with it too. So.
I feel like pioneer movement is just very slow and like crotchety because they've had to sleep on the ground.
What would it have been like in a wagon train? Like you're the fourth wagon back and you're like, oh good, we're going to bounce down like this on this rickety old wooden thing for another day. Super exciting.
Well, I'm not a pioneer, but I have played Oregon Trail.
Right.
Like it was very tedious.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not, yeah.
Punctuated by
supplies game.
Punctuated by dysentery and river crossings.
Punctuated by a sudden bout of extreme terror as you're being attacked by Native Americans or like a bear or something.
Oh yeah, and you could go hunting. I forgot about that.
No. Oh, can you? Yeah. Seriously, like you set off with all the bullets, right? Because that's what you did as a kid. You get all the bullets. And then you run out. Like, what do you do? Well, I made it to Arkansas. Now I'm going to die.
That's because
people still say that. I feel like people probably still say that.
It's because you didn't get enough bullets.
Yeah.
And you didn't get any food besides what you thought you would hunt on the way. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really bad strategy because yeah.
I feel like my wagon just always broke down and I didn't have enough like spare axles to like fix the wheels, and that was always because it was maybe I bought too much.
Obviously, neither of you were playing by the unspoken rule that you always leave as the doctor. That way you have money, and yeah. When someone gets sick, you can get them. You can help them not be sick anymore.
What were some of the other options? You could be the doctor, you could be...
Banker.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, farmer, which was shit.
Was that the deal?
What?
What was the value in the banker? You could buy things at a discount?
Yeah, you just had shit tons of money.
I think, yeah, you had more money to start off with.
And carpenter, which was also, I mean, moderately helpful because you could repair your wagon when it broke, but... You didn't have, I mean, the doctor was the shit. The doctor was the thing that you did because you had the money, not as much money as the banker, but you had the money and you could heal people when they're sick.
If you could send any career back in time to the Oregon Trail, what career would you add to it?
Software developer.
I was thinking
Alley, astronaut.
Well, okay. We're all on the same page there.
Optometrist.
No, oh, that's a good one.
That would be far too useful. I'd much rather see a software developer on the Oregon Trail be like, I don't know how to work with these criteria.
Where's my JavaScript framework?
this framework does not work with me.
Next time.
What's that?
Let's abstract it so we can reuse it when we have to cross the next river.
Yeah.
Oh no! In the time I abstracted it, I got eaten by a bear.
I got eaten by a bear.
Need to abstract the wagon so we can float it across the river.
Or at least hub, yeah. Or like the method of... Let's use the factory pattern. We can build a wagon factory and then we're going to never run out of wagons. Oh, this is a good idea. Let's stash this. What do you mean I can't get stash in real life? Are you all worried about Get Checkout going away and Get Switch, Get Reset?
I do not know what this is you speak of.
So Get Checkout, well, it'll still work for a while. It's not deprecated yet. But Get the next...
What do you mean, like, when you check?
Uh-oh. You froze for a second.
My bad.
I think you're back.
Yeah, you're back.
So when you check out a branch?
Yeah, so the idea is that checkout has two meanings right now. You check out a branch, but then you can also like check out a file from another branch specifically, which is not actually checking it out, it's resetting it to the, you know? So they're adding two commands to distinguish between them. So get switch would be the get checkout branch. And get, what's the other one, Chris? You're up on this.
No, I'm not.
Okay, get.
I don't think this will affect my life in the slightest.
Okay, well that's cool.
Hey.
Yeah.
Good.
It won't affect me nearly as much as it will affect all the people who have written bash commands to shortcut git checkout.
Yeah. Pick me. That's why I'm like, because I use GCO for everything. Not for everything, but.
But for enough.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yep. So GCO. Well,
I feel like modernized because I've been using Visual Studio for the last like month and haven't hated it. So now I feel like, you know, I'm up with the times because I was using Sublime for this whole time, basically since freelancing. And yeah.
Do you have XDebug working with Sublime?
No, I never had XDebug working with Sublime.
Oh.
I never cared.
I have a project I'm working on right now. That's like a tiny side thing. And I don't have XDebug set up on it, so I didn't get around to it. And like every time I work on it, I'm like, oh, I should just I guess I'll just print R and die instead.
That's how I YOLO.
Yeah, and it's okay. I actually don't know that it would it would be faster with XDebug. But I don't know. Maybe I'll set it up. Probably not. I'm doing so little on it. It's like, we filter gravity form thing. Sure, we can do that.
That's the thing. When everybody was like complaining about XDebug integration or whatever, and I'm like, what is that even? How does that even make your life like easier or faster?
Well, so stepping through is awesome. If you don't know where things aren't working,
well, right? If XDebug is set up on the server or in the local environment, whatever. Like I'm 100% like, let's have XDebug working on the environment, but like. When you do a var dump and XDebug is set up, then it gives you the stack trace anyway. Whereas, like, you know, and that's how, like, that's what I use, like, if I need to.
The difference is that there are times where you're not sure, like, where in the step of this process is the data incorrect. So being able to step through it, figuring out, like, oh, well, here's a great example. Like, what was that complaint about the other day? WP post delete? This is throwing content, by the way. WP post delete doesn't take a post object at, like, most WordPress post methods. Functions, it takes only the ID. Most you can pass the post object or the ID and it figures it out, not post delete. So after I didn't delete 60,000 posts because they didn't exist, or they did, they were, there was no like post zero. I don't know what happened. It didn't work. Then I had to go back into it again with the right way. XDebug wouldn't have saved me there. Like actually reading the definition of the function would have helped.
It does help doing it the right way.
Yeah. Should do more of that.
Well, that takes all the fun out of it.
Doing things correctly helps. So that took a turn.
I'm still on Sublime. I just can't give it up. It's all so tidy. I have all my shortcuts. Everything's so nice.
That's the important thing, right? Like, you have the things that you're used to.
I keep thinking, like, maybe the next project I'll give VS Code more of a, because it seems lovely. It's not that it's bad. It's just that I'm just what I'm used to, and I don't feel like slowing down my workflow at this point. But
things that I like or things I appreciate about VS Code is pretty little icons for different file types. You can do that in Sublime. I did find a theme that in Sublime. That was actually one of the things that took me over to VS Code, because the thing that did it in Sublime was like, it's just like VS Code. And I'm like, wait.
Hey.
Wait, what are you talking about? Icons?
Yeah. Yeah. So like the different file types have different icons that are specific to the file. So JSON files are brackets, and PHP files are like little elephants. And the file is like a little Git like logo thing, and SAS files are like the fancy little S thing.
It's a Git logo covering its eyes like it's ignoring it. Yeah, I got you. The monkey, the little monkey emoji. Oh, wow.
And
I think I'm going to change all the icons on my computer to be monkey emojis.
And then there was a VS Code plugin that I used that was extremely helpful that copied your Sublime keyboard shortcuts for everything into VS Code. So like you didn't have to change what you're doing with your fingers because it would just map all that stuff to the VS Code equivalents. So the big things that I still haven't figured out on VS Code that still puzzle me is like in Sublime, if I hold down shift and I go up arrow, down arrow, it will select multiple lines. If I do that in VS Code, it says what?
It's weird because I swear it works for, I don't know.
Yeah.
I need to investigate more because I mentor some code classes and they use Firefox and VS Code in combination as their defaults. And so like I don't know what is inherently VS Code and what are like things that we've installed during class, basically. Yeah. So I need to go back and double check my list. I'm like I probably have something mapped or I don't know.
I tried looking for the setting several times. I'm sure it's there.
Yeah.
But I have not figured it out yet still.
And you don't realize how much you're doing stuff like that. Like, oh, highlighting multiple lines. How often do I really do that? And you're like, all the time.
I know. Every time I command shift left arrow to like the previous line, I realize just how much I use that particular keyboard
company. And maybe that's what Pioneer Movement is, when you go to do that thing and then it just totally
fails.
Oh, that's a cool theory.
You're pioneering a new skill. You're pioneering a new skill and you're trying to do a thing that you did with a previous set of instructions and it doesn't work.
It's kind of the next step beyond muscle memory. It's like the follow through.
And then when you have retrained yourself, it's called pioneer memory.
Yeah. I wouldn't survive as a pioneer, though, to sum up.
Well, I mean, yeah. Like, it's.
I mean, maybe if I was like the baker or something in like a village. I don't know. I'm like, my skill set for like pioneer skills is very. I don't know. I can chop wood.
The visual thing is a problem. Like there weren't eyeglasses really, right?
Pretty sure most of my medications aren't available.
Yeah, you would just be basically considered crazy.
Yeah. I'd be the crazy old witch that lives in the corner of the village. Yeah.
She floats.
I know. I'm like, this is fine. Let me corrupt everybody.
All those natural remedies that you're smoking in the back of your
I'm like, do you have a thyroid problem too? Come on down. I've got an herb for that.
I would not do well as a pioneer either. For a variety of reasons, but mostly skill involved. Skill based.
I feel like I could make it happen.
You seem tenacious enough. But see, again, if something happened to my glasses, that just basically...
Yeah, I would get out of the tent one morning and go out to take a leak and pee on a bear, and that would be the end of me. It's big and brown and blurry.
Big, brown, and blurry. See, like, and I don't even think, if I was, like, transported back, I don't even think my anxieties would know what to be anxious about. Like, I don't think I'd be able to transfer... my stress.
Oh, that's a good point. Like you hop back there and you wouldn't even know like what are things that can kill me that I should be wary of that I'm just not even
like what do I need to know about? So I just wouldn't again and like it would just basically be like Al that the crazy old witch lady doesn't leave her tent because she's too scared.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, you're afraid of being attacked by a wild animal when in fact the thing that's gonna kill you is like some like something bad that got into the food or something.
Yeah.
Or like the water supply. Like, oh, there's no one at this well. I'm thirsty. I get all the water.
Or I didn't like cook a thing enough before I ate it. And like, yeah. I was like, oh, a mushroom. Like, this is fine.
With someone that you weren't supposed to make eye contact with. And then that'd be it. They...
No eye contact.
Yeah.
Crazy eye, Bill.
Well, which eye do you look at? in different directions. That's why they call him Crazy Eye Bill. Just not sure which one's the crazy eye.
Works out in favor.
I don't know the timer. Do we want to know what Pioneer Movement is, or do we? Final thoughts on Pioneer Movement?
Sure. Let's find out. What...
I mean, we don't have like a real schedule or plan.
Yeah.
No, I know that. I guess I was just looking for consensus. Pioneer Movement is an organization for children operated by a communist party. So in communist countries, it is the equivalent of scouting.
Pioneer Movement. So they're just like little pioneers.
Yeah. Yep. So.
And here I was stuck in Girl Scouts. I could have been a communist pioneer.
Well, it has to be. It's a, the party actually like runs it. So it's state-sponsored scouting, right? And there are a lot of benefits. It's often maligned as being a form of indoctrination by non-communist countries. But yeah, so it's kind of fascinating. It's the communist version of scouts, individual to each country that's communist.
Do you know if they have different levels like scouts do? Like, do you work towards like an Eagle Scout sort of situation or?
Yes, but I'm pretty certain it wouldn't be an eagle.
No. Well, that was my follow-up question. Was
yeah.
Like, what are the levels name?
I don't know. And it varies because it's country specific, just like scouting is pretty country specific. But it pretty much mirrored scouting, or it has used a lot of the models in scouting as we know it, to kick off. So
I was always bummed out by scouting. Because I saw my older brother go through it, and he got to do all this cool stuff. And then when I joined Girl Scouts, I didn't get to do any of the same stuff. So I dropped out after a few years.
It took me halfway through this conversation to realize that by scouts, you're not talking about like talent scouts. You're talking about...
Boys and Girl Scouts, yes.
Yeah. Going out into the wilderness and doing nature-y things.
So listen to some of these countries that have pioneer movements. Belgium. China, obviously, Cuba, Finland, the Czech Republic, Laos, Mexico, North Korea, Portugal, Russia, Ukraine, Spain. So there's some surprises in there.
But not all of those are communist countries.
Right. Right. The Communist Party is leading in those non-communist countries, right? So.
Interesting.
I would assume, too, that It's probably like a way, if you're a member of the party, it's a way to get your children, like, you know. Yeah, early on. Yep.
Yeah. Boys and Girl Scouts have, it's not like they are absent of accusations of indoctrination either.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. The best part is in
different type of indoctrination.
Yeah. 19, well, yeah, yes. Yes.
I mean, what are parents if not indoctrinating the children?
Is it though? Because I mean, like scouting, like we, when the kids go, like we start with like the Pledge of Allegiance and then the Scout Oath and the Scout Law, like every time. So, I mean, from a very like high level, it's not significantly different. Like the approach anyway. 1922 to 1934, there was a Young Pioneers League of America affiliated with the Communist Party of the USA. Found that kind of interesting too. Yeah, so see what we missed out on being more than we were.
Well, that has nothing to do with space.
Nothing at all.
I know. That's kind of
so,
confusing.
So on that's so like against type.
Right, three for a loop there. It's, gotcha.
It's against the protocol that we don't claim to have.
Which is interesting because I actually had another topic that was space related, but I feel like you would know what it is. So,
but would we know? Would we know what it is because we know, or because you have told us already?
Yeah.
That's why I think you might know. I might have talked about it already.
I mean, not that Chris and I aren't knowledgeable, but like I feel like space isn't.
Yeah, that's sort of your territory. Yeah.
You're like space is our final frontier.
What was the other topic? The space related topic.
Core rope memory?
Core rope memory?
Yeah. Did we talk about this?
No.
Ah.
Darn.
So good. So good. So, like, they...
Is it like when you make a knot and then you can't undo the rope because you're, like, that's stuck. That's the memory of the knot.
It was actually memory, like storage on the Apollo missions. They actually wove, like, in ones and zeros, they wove this copper wire through these, like, plates, and they would alternate the current to give it a one or a zero on the plate, and the pattern of the winding at the end of the board was, like, how you would put the data out. So they basically, like, wove the operating system.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
See, that's the sort of thing where I'm just, I get to the point for innovation where I'm like, how did it occur to someone to even start that process? Not even.
I know. I think it occurred, they ran, like, a wire through, like a magnet. They were like, oh, cool, if I spin it this way, like, I get a one, if this way, I get a zero. Like, it's on or off, right?
Yeah.
High voltage, low voltage. And they were like, I wonder if I could do that, like, at a scale where I could store data, because at that point, bits and stuff were sort of unknown. So, anyway.
Yeah, working with technology and information at that level, I still don't understand. I took assembly language, and I've probably said this many times. I've taken assembly language. I still don't understand, like, why I did that and what it would have been used for. Like,
oh, see, that's interesting. Yeah.
Like I was in there. I was writing it. I kind of understand, but, like, I still don't understand, like, how it works or, like, how it gets. Yeah. Like, going down to that scale of, like, actually, like alternating voltage currents is just that becomes too micro for my brain to comprehend.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, I like, think about, like, what's happening in PHP, right? So PHP, step one is going down to C, right? And then from C, we're dropping down to, like, assembly, right? Is that what C files do? I guess. I don't know. And then from assembly, then, like, the processor is interpreting that language and saying, well, let's do something with this transistor over here, and maybe this one over here. And then out the other side, like, well, now we got to put all that crap back together and, like, back up the chain. Like, it's pretty wild, like, how far, like, the early computery folks went to make it accessible for the rest of us to actually, like, write stuff that does things.
Most of these thought processes end up with me aligning on the fact that I'm just like, humans are weird. Why do we do these things?
It really does seem like not very logical that this is how we ended up with, like, computing. That we've abstracted, and then what do you, we use it to, like, send photos of cats. Like, seems like there's, like, a higher responsibility somewhere in there with all this.
Sending photos of cats?
I mean, maybe not. It is it's a valid thing.
Have you seen some people's cats? They need to be shared with the world.
What was that? What's that Instagram thing you shared with a dog's face the other day?
Oh, Momo's face.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah, I was amazed, like, when I started scrolling, how far I scrolled and how long I scrolled before I went, I gotta do some work.
I think it's, I was telling my friends, I was like, I think it speaks to, like, the, I don't know, there's something about the repetition of it that is, like, calming, as well as the fact that it's just, like, a dog's face and the nose, and you just kind of want to go boop.
Oh, I just want to, like, oh, I want to hug that dog so much.
I will say I did not scroll for probably as long as you did, Gary.
Yeah, I wish I had known. I would have set, like, a timer to see.
I scrolled down to where there is the video that sort of was, like, the montage of a whole bunch of pictures. And then I was like, yeah, okay, I'm done.
Like, I get it.
It was a very cute dog. I think that I'm a cat person still.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's all right.
So, self-identified cat person.
Yeah, yeah. I'm self-identified cat lord. Which we have determined that is the alternate equivalent of cat lady. I'm not a cat lady, so I'm a cat lord.
No, because you have to bring it to that regal level, yeah. Because otherwise it's just lost. You're not a peasant.
Surely not. catch
us. Can we talk about space for a minute since we haven't?
Sure. Let's talk about space.
There was a ULA launch this morning. What was it? Was it a Delta IV? I don't remember what it was. And we don't get a lot of ULA launches from Kennedy Space Center these days, or just in general. So I'm often seeing like Falcon 9s, and I kind of know like the pace at which they move through the sky. So I know after launch, like how long I have to walk out to the driveway to look and see if I can see it.
You so live for the in such a different reality.
So I was watching the ULA launch, and I'm like, well, I'll go out there a little bit early because I'm not sure how long. And that thing was hauling ass. Because by the time I got to the end of the driveway, like it was, I mean, it was a minute ahead of where I expect the Falcon 9 to be at that point. Now, granted, there might have been some like delay that I'm not aware of on the YouTube feed that doesn't exist on the SpaceX stuff. I don't know. I mean, there's probably a bunch of variables that I'm not accounting for, but it seemed to be moving a lot quicker than I expected.
Well, and sometimes they don't call things off, but they do like an extra double check, like if something's malfunctioned or like vice versa, right? Like, I feel like they always have those announcements that are like, well, they don't name who's doing the check, but I was about to be like, Bob is double checking the something something engine.
ULA has gotten really good. So ULA always has a built-in hold as part of their launch process. So when they give you like a launch time of 9 o'clock or whatever, like 4 minutes before launch, they put a hold in. And usually that hold is about like 10 minutes or so. So like when you see the countdown, like knowing that there's going to be a 10-minute hold happens. And then more often than not, they just bump back a few minutes. So it was a 9:01 launch this morning, and they ended up during the hold extending it to 9:06 just because they didn't like some stuff they were seeing, but they wanted to get it. They figured it would take care of itself if they waited long enough. I mean, I don't know. That's probably like a really oversimplification, but a lot of it's like
everything. I feel like everything that a back alley astronaut could come up with in an explanation of a rocket launch is probably a very poor explanation of what they were actually doing.
Ouch!
Wait, what was the thing that you were describing that was woven before? What is it called?
Core rope memory. Yeah, that's a fun hole to get into. There's several good articles about that. And it was like in my consciousness. I guess maybe my conscience too.
It's affecting your conscience as well.
It just gets to the level of like Turing machines and like machines that like actually process ones and zeros to store information. And like that's and like when they did when they stored information on like punch cards and stuff. And that's a level of abstraction that my brain just can't like. How does that translate into data? I don't understand.
But it's not abstraction. Like in that case, like it's closer to the.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Yeah. So for your brain, it's an abstraction. But for the computer, it's like less work.
Yeah.
No, my brain can't.
It's becoming a language I understand or almost understand.
Yeah. I don't understand how that turns into a. Like.
Anything. Someone could put me in a room and try to explain it to me for an entire day, and I would just be like, what is what is? And I'd just say, lunch.
Like, I kind of understand how you can, like, store information on a magnetic tape, and then you run that tape through some sort of a reader, and then the reader, like, processes the information, but, like that I can get, or, like, you can store it on, like, a spinning disk, like, that I understand, but...
Think of this, then, like an 8-track.
Yeah.
You would send in, like, voltage to change which track you're listening to. So different voltage input on different parts would change the output.
Sure.
With lunch?
So like this punch card is track one and this punch card is track five. But there already has to be like the record player. what's it called? Precursor to record player. Something or other phone. Anyway, so you put it in, and then it says, "Oh, I should put the needle in this groove right here." Yeah.
When I was in college, I was really big on trying to understand how operating systems like bootstrap. So, like, how when you start a computer, does the operating system know to like actually start doing things? Like before the operating system exists, like there has to be a way to start up the things that make the operating system start up. Like something has to happen. And I think I got really close to understanding at some point, and now it just baffles me. Like, now I think about it, I'm like, what the hell? I mean,
But that's like because your brain needs to make room for knowledge that's like relevant to you on a day to day, right?
I turn on a lot of computers.
I know, but you don't need to like consciously think about that each time.
That's true. It would take a lot longer for it to boot if I had to do that, wouldn't it?
I mean, I say this as someone who like my brain is like 25% Disney lyrics, so maybe this is not the best argument. But I like to think that our brains like kind of go through things and being like, this is relevant to my day to day, it needs to like be filed as such.
I think probably it has a lot to do with how directly you're interacting with that. Like I think that if you when we used Linux, when it was like earlier in the bootstrapper, like mattered, like the, you know, whatever, using your grub system or whatever you're trying to do, that's
yeah,
before the operating system loads, then that matters. I mean, then you care about it more because you're working with it more, and then you would remember or think about it more.
So we're basically saying you don't care about it, and that's why that's you don't true. Know it anymore.
Oh.
Which is like kind of sad.
Do we have questions today?
The only question that we have is from Allison, who asks, what has been the highlight of your week so far?
That's a good question.
In my defense, I asked this like 2 months ago, I think.
Yeah. Oh, what was the highlight of my week 2 months ago?
No, but it can be for this week. Let's go for this week.
I don't care about it because I can't remember it, apparently. this week. I had a very nice deploy last night. Very smooth.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Just like an hour and a half. Boom, done.
Something's nondescript. You're like, it just went.
Yeah. I didn't have to do a lot. I mean, I just hung out. We had a meetup for the people who were involved in the deploy. So we sort of chatted a bit, what was doing its thing, kept an eye on it. And then went to bed.
The highlight of my week this week has been understanding time.
Understanding time.
Yeah, well, I'm in a programming sense. Although I'm looking at.
Oh, you just think you do.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm looking at logs, and I was supposed to send out an email today at 8 o'clock Central, and didn't. So I did not understand time nearly as much as I thought I did. But the major problems that I had with time have been solved, I believe. So at least that's something.
That's great.
That's good. Dealing with time is not fun.
But yeah, it didn't do the thing that I wanted it to do, and back to the drawing board. Although it could just be like time zone thing. I don't know. Time is hard.
This is why we should only work in Unix timestamps.
It's true.
Yeah, I had a conversation about that yesterday. And that's definitely one way of doing it. But then like you as a human don't grasp the like what Unix timestamp like means, because it's not relevant to you personally right this second, in this minute.
Lies.
You're an anomaly.
That's probably also true.
It's definitely, I can 100% say it's true.
It's only been like 1.5 billion-ish seconds since January 1st, 1970. UTC.
Billion-ish.
Well, I didn't want to. Yeah, 1.565485849.
And the final minute of Binary Jazz is Gary reciting the minute, the second since the epoch in Unix time.
And then he starts to recite pi from memory. Yeah,
right.
How far can you go in pi from memory?
3.14.
Oh. So I think 3.14159268, and then I lose it there. But we should check and see.
But see, like, I just have to agree with you, because since I don't know, I'm like, yep, sounds fine.
3.14159265. I got it wrong. 3.14159265. But I guess, like, there was something I read online that after, I don't know what the number was, after, like, four digits or five, like, it's completely immaterial in, like, on planet Earth. Like you would be, if you get to like five and you do the math on there and use that as like your like margin of error, like more than likely, like the tools that you use are going to be more inaccurate than your calculations. So like it's kind of silly to calculate as much beyond.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.